This week I wanted to tell you something very important. There are so many people practicing spirituality. But the real attempt is to break out of the conditioning that you've been brought up with all your life. Can anybody hear me? Do you want to type in? You want to type in whether you can hear me or not? It's so very hard to break out of the conditioning we were born and raised with. People come to me wanting to get out of the trap that they're in, whether it's emotional, whether it's depression, whether it's feeling they're lost, feeling that they're not getting anywhere, disappointment, or perhaps they're hounded by a search for something, a search for God, a search for enlightenment, a search for peace. But it's so hard to break out of our conditioning, and that's what it's all about, is breaking out of our stupid concepts about who and what we are, and coming to a realization who we are, just different from what we think. It's so much easier to do it in a monastery where everything is controlled. Meals are controlled. Everybody's silent. Work in silence. Everything is simplified. There's a lot of meditation, a lot of interaction with the spiritual teacher, Roshi. But in everyday life, we're still caught in the trap almost all the time. We can have satsang for an hour and a half, and 3 hours later, 4 hours later, we find ourselves being drawn back into the trap. It requires incredible intensity to break out of the trap. That's why I recommend so much love. Because love can provide the intensity necessary to break out of the conditioning, to break your mind open and open your heart. And I don't mean a little love. I mean the kind that sets your heart on fire, your whole body on fire, lights your heart flame, makes you tremble in anticipation of the intensity of the love. A love so intense that when any negativity comes along, the negativity is also amplified fivefold, sixfold. You become like a helpless 2-year-old again, with the intensity of the emotions. And the intensity is what allows you to break out of the trap that you're in. Now, you can do I am meditation by following the sense of I am deeply inside. Just feel the sense of I am and go deeply inside. Follow the I am. Rest in the I am. Love the I am. And that love for the I am will build an intensity. It's like the love muscle. The more it is twitched, the stronger it gets, the more powerful its effects are, and the more quickly you can rip your mind open. Because what this is really about is getting rid of all conditioning, all understanding, so that you become dumb as a rock and just a raw witness to the magnificence of who you are and what you are, which without engaging your thinking mind just presents itself to you, who you are. There are many parts of who you are. There's the who you are that the Advaitins talk about all the time, which is the sense of being alive, the beingness, there's the part that the Buddhists talk about all the time, which is space, emptiness, emptiness of your inner world and emptiness of your outer world. There's the part of you that's just the witness that the phenomenal world appears to, and you are merely the witness, removed from phenomena as the noumena, as the potential. When you identify with that part of you, you become totally aware of your separateness from consciousness and that you have nothing to do with consciousness. Consciousness is a play that you're watching, you're witnessing, you're reacting to. And if you identify yourself with the witness, the reactions stop. And then there's the part of you that goes unconscious and during the night becomes totally unaware. Morning comes and you feel like, my, I must have slept 5 or 6 hours, and sure enough, that's what you did. Or maybe you slept 11 hours or 12 hours. But you know you slept a long time, but you know you existed during that period of time. Anyway, it's an intuition. There's a part of you that knows not knowing, being unconscious. There's a part of you that's aware of being conscious. And this part of you, this knowing, this principle, is not itself subject to knowingness. It's beyond knowingness. This is what Nisargadatta shoots for. That state beyond the I am, beyond consciousness, as your fundamental state of potentiality, of the noumena. Which knows illusion, which is what he calls consciousness. It is not real. Now what does it mean it's not real? It means that everything we know now really is conditioning. It's because we're a 21st century American brought up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, or European for that matter, what's the difference? And we all see the world in the same conditioned manner. An Aborigine from the 14th century, from Australia, come here to modern New York, would have no idea what's going on. Vice versa, we could not enter that world, their world. Their world of magic, where they communicate with each other telepathically over long distances. We can't enter easily the world of the shaman. We can't enter easily the world of a Zen master. We can't enter the world of a two-year-old once again. Gone past that. We can't do that again. We can't become that simple-minded. Because we've matured. We can't reach back and become that simple-minded. Because the brain has changed. Our bodies have changed. It's not possible to step backwards into that stream that far. We know too much. We've had too much experience. So when we become simple-minded, something else happens. We don't see the world like a two-year-old. We see the world like a 40-year-old pretending to be a two-year-old by getting rid of the mind. But a baby has a very fanciful mind. A two-year-old has a very imaginative mind, a mind of magic. Mind where anything is possible. We can't do that because we know what's possible and not possible. And it's so hard to break out of that conditioning. Now, I got a letter, email this morning, or was it yesterday, from Lila saying that she's moving on. That the energies are moving through her all the time now, constantly, continuously, powerfully. And she thanked me for our time together, but she feels her path now is different from the path that I've been talking about. And it's not based so much on love for another, but love for the energy she feels inside of her, which she calls Shakti. And Shakti becomes a manifestation of the self, which is showing her, the small self, the way to becoming the big self, the whole self. And in her view, the small self disappears eventually and is absorbed into the large self, the whole self, the Shakti. And she's just along for the ride. But she doesn't recognize that the Shakti is nothing more than the self. Nor, in my experience, does the little self, the personality, disappear. It's more that we're joined at the hip with God, the little Enrique, the little Matthew, the little Ben, the little Chris, as a human being with all our vulnerabilities, our stupidities, our mistakes, our frustrations, our jealousies, our angers. That shit never goes away. It gets less and it gets attenuated, but we act it out all the time. But we're also aware of the God principle in us, or we can be. And the God principle is created by loving another, or loving the I am inside oneself. The operative verb, you might say, is loving. I don't put as much emphasis on the Shakti, or the energies, or the bliss, as Joan does, as Lila does. I think it's all about love. She thinks it's all about energies. So she parted ways. She says she feels as if the Shakti is removing, day by day, minute by minute, hour by hour, parts of herself. And they're just falling away. My experience was similar but also different. For me, at a certain point, the self presented itself to me in the grandest possible manner of explosive light and all that kind of crap, like happened with Robert. After that one experience, I was always aware of the self. And I was always aware of the little self, Eddie. And how we worked together. But I never, ever, ever let go of the need for loving. And not loving that self, because that's obvious. You can't help but love it once you're exposed to it. Because you see it's you, and it's so grand. But I'm talking about loving another person as yourself. To love Chris as myself. Paranoid as he is. Congratulations, Chris. I welcome your paranoia in our Sangha. It's needed in this time of world spying. Of George W. Obama. Massive spying scandals and all that. Little paranoia is very healthy. By the way, do your little bags conceal the smell of gunpowder? Okay, good to know. So, how do we break out? We break out of the bag by loving, 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 loving. And the energies come as a consequence, whether we call it Shakti, Chi, Prana, Quantum Touch, Meridian Energies, Chakra Energies, Bliss, Ecstasy. They come sort of as a reward. They tell you, like, my God, this feels so good. I want to just continue going inside. It's like a positive feedback for interiorizing our vision rather than to have it always exteriorize in concepts and searching outside of ourselves. But it's really necessary to make an effort to learn how to love ever more strongly. Love your dog, Chris. Love your dog with all your heart. Same with you, Keith. Love your dog. Love your students, Matthew. Dia, love your students. Love, 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 love. Love at extreme intensity. If there's sexual love in there, use it too, because that tantric element is so powerful. Just know your limits and the boundaries in the relationship. But love with your complete passion. Love like you've never loved before, where it makes you crazy mad to be with the other. Whether it's your dog, or a lover, your guru, a student, whoever, the Dalai Lama, President Obama, Michelle Obama, whoever, whatever your inclination is. And the energies will come. Whether they're purifying or not, that is another concept depending upon the system. Now, there are so many systems, there are so many ways to become self-realized or to realize the absolute. At some point you have to drop the ways, because all of them are bullshit, all of them are lies, but they're temporary bridges from where you are in the trap that you're in of conceptualization and conditioning to escaping to a different world. So, you can deliberately stop thinking, and we'll try this exercise later and I'll show it to you. Which is, you just stop thinking. You think at first you can't do it, but after a while you learn how to not do it. You become stupid as a rock. And for an hour every day, you become dumb as a rock and just let feelings come up. Let emotions come up. Let perceptions come up. Let images come up. Let imaginations come up. On the other hand, you can still do the loving the I am, but sometimes it's good to change a little. Change your perspective a little, to loosen things up, rather than become too focused on one technique, one teaching. Come a little looser, not so tight. You can practice far too much, and you get too tight and you make no progress, you're overtrained. Or you can do the Dia way of freedom, which is to use your imagination to see the invisible within the visible. This is a highly use your imagination, especially an optimistic imagination, to see what you wish to see, or to see that which you never noticed before because you hadn't paid attention to it before. And your mind can make up images. It becomes receptive. It becomes blank. And images and stories start flowing through your mind and through your heart. And you see alternative worlds that way. And you break out of this, as Robert called it, the lowest hell, through your imagination. There are many ways. I chose the one by Nisargadatta because it was the most rational, and I thought the most rational for Westerners to grasp and to practice, which is to present the four levels of consciousness, like I did in the book Self-Realization and Other Awakenings. Plus a method of penetrating the four levels and then even going beyond the four levels to the absolute. And contained within that is where Lila is fooling around now, which is Turiya, the fourth state, which she calls Shakti, which I call the self. This is the phenomenal self. This is the God self. This is Christ consciousness. This is Krishna consciousness. This is not the absolute in terms of Nisargadatta's system. It's the next to the last step. But it's a step filled with bliss, ecstasy, creativity, love, and all the kinds of things that anybody had ever wanted, which overwhelms any kind of depression, any kind of unhappiness, any kind of negativity. It just burns it away. And the body burns in ecstasy and bliss and happiness that is so mind-destroying that for days at a time you don't feel like moving, because you feel so perfect that the slightest movement will destroy the perfection. But you do that slightest movement and it's still perfect, but you still don't feel like moving because you're in constant communion with God. There are so many ways to escape, and it's so hard to do. So much of it depends on your attitude as a student and the teacher you're with. If the teacher conveys love and conveys energies, you can pick that up and you start resonating with them. It's easy to feel the energies. A lot of people come here, and the first day, they start feeling energies after they enter the satsang, the sangha. It's so easy to do. Just face-to-face for a few minutes, I can get you to feel the energies. Dia can, I'm sure Matthew can by now, too. Lila said that she can now give these energies to other people. They're open to her giving the energies, but you know, anybody can give the energies once they begin feeling them. Dia can, I can, Matthew can. I think even Carly can by now. Sylviana certainly, Max certainly. So this is about breaking out of conditioning by using intense love, intense emotions, and the technique of holding on to the I am and going deeper and deeper. But let's try another one. Let's try another method. This is called Dumb as a Rock method. Do this for a few minutes. Here's how it works. You close your eyes about three-fourths of the way, so you're looking downwards and there's some light at the bottom. Relax as much as possible, but you sit upright rather than lay down. And relax. Let your attention drop into your chest, into your heart. Thoughts as they arise. There are two ways you can deal with thoughts. You can cut them down as soon as you notice them when they arise, or you can totally ignore them. Now, attaining the ability to cut thoughts down as soon as they arise puts you in the most blissful state you can imagine. It's a state of being totally stupid, knowing nothing, caring about nothing, not knowing where you are, not caring where you are, not caring where you're going to go to. But it's difficult to learn. It takes months. But close your eyes, like I said, 3/4 of the way. Relax. Drop your attention into your chest. And as soon as you notice a thought, just stop it. Chop it down with your attention. You'll have a tendency to go off to sleep. But when you catch yourself falling asleep, wake up. Sit strongly, fully alert, like you're a fighter pilot in an F-16 or an F-22. You're going 600 miles per hour at 50 feet above the ground. Not for one moment can you relax. Not for one moment can you lose your alertness or you'll die. With that kind of intensity, as soon as a thought arises, cut it down. Cut it down. Don't waver. Listen to my voice. Cut the thoughts down. Become dumb as a rock. Let your brain become solid. So there's no room for a thought. And you become dumber and dumber. Cut the thoughts down. Don't let them flower. Cut them as soon as they arise with the sword of discrimination. Just hold on to your stupidity. Hold on to the dumb mind and do it from the heart. Keep alert. Keep alert. Keep alert. Feel the silence between the thoughts. Feel the emptiness between the thoughts. Feel the space between the thoughts. Let your mind become that space. Utterly clear, utterly alert. And I'll tell you, it's so hard to do this at first. The mind has to be trained to become like a steel trap. A spring-loaded trap that whenever a thought arises, the trap springs. And you become stupid. And in that stupidity, there can be a new birth of freedom. Freedom from the old. Freedom from conventional. Freedom from thought. Freedom from concepts. This just a few minutes of practice, because this is really hard stuff at first. Let's go to another chant. Keep that same alertness during this chanting, only This time, allow the music to go in. Don't stop it. Let's try Jaya Jagatambe. It's on the left-hand side of the Krishna Das chants, the second one down. 12 minutes. At the count of four, hit the triangle. And keep your mind the same kind of clarity, the same kind of stupidity, and let the music go through that emptiness that you've created. One, two, three, four.